Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Tough situation for so many NBA teams heading into the remainder of this postseason. Who's going to be available? And when that question is centered especially around your stars, there's a lot of cause for concern. Janae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Christine Williamson, kind enough to sit in for Janae Wumake today with us. And Christine, so much of the regular season in the NBA was dominated by the conversations we're having right now. The quick turnaround in the season, jamming 72 games into the short amount of time that they had, especially after the All-Star break. And now it seems like we're finally paying for it, as we got news today. Ramona Shelburne and Brian Windhorst both put up an article on ESPN.com that among so many of the other injuries that we've seen, already 8 different All-Star players missing at least a game for an NBA record. Kawhi Leonard will now miss Wednesday's Game 5 against the Utah Jazz with a right knee injury that could keep him out for the remainder of the series. So as you look at this, Christine, and see how big a factor this has been in the postseason, does it change the way that you're going to look at the rest of the outcomes of this postseason, the champion that we eventually crown, knowing how many people have been affected by how this season was put together?
I would say yes and no, because I think going into when we saw the Lakers losing in the playoffs, the Warriors not getting into the playoffs, all of those things happening, we already knew that this playoff was going to be a lot different than the playoffs that we've seen in the past. So yes, because of that, but no, because this is obviously an unprecedented year, an unprecedented season, right? Like, we knew that things were not going to look like what we were used to. And so I think it does affect how we look at this playoffs postseason. But ultimately, like, the team that's able to get out of this postseason and be crowned a champion, I feel like it's a great thing that they were able to do it. Like, that's still a huge feat because so many other teams and players weren't able to make it that far.
I'm with you, Christine, and I've said this, that so many people are going to get caught up because you know there are people waiting to do the ratings thing. The NBA has always been a league that's polarizing because it's outspoken, and so there are going to be certain groups of people that always want to weaponize the ratings conversation against the NBA, and some people that might even do it and point to and say, look what happens when you don't have the Celtics or the Lakers or some of the brands that we're used to. And I don't think it would have anything to do with that. What could end up hurting the playoffs, if anything does, because I think the games have been really good, is the fact that so many of them have unfortunately featured far fewer of the stars on these teams. Had that influenced the outcome more than anything else in this? And so if maybe at the macro level we're going to be okay, Christine, I want to do hit it on the micro for a second, because Kawhi Leonard, now down, going to be out for Game 5 for the Clippers, which means the focus is on Paul George here, and it feels like we already spend so much time harping on Paul George and what he's going to do here. So, Christine, just flat out, what do you expect from him in this game? Because I feel like what do we expect out of Paul George is an answer that depends a lot on where you want to come at this from. If you're someone who's on the side that usually wants to slander Paul George, we tend to put those expectations sky high. And if you are some other people who might just be fans of the Clippers at this point, I feel like you're going to want to guard those a bit.
I don't want to slander Paul George. I don't want to slander Paul George because he's the number two guy. Like, he's not the number one guy. We don't expect him to come out and be KD in this situation. So I'm not going to slander him because I think the expectation, it's a lot of pressure, but the expectation should be exactly the same. I feel like everybody around him needs to step up so that it's not all on his shoulders to carry this team. So I'm not going to slander him. I feel like he is going to have to be a little bit more productive, obviously, but I don't think that it all falls on him, even though the conversation is all about him.
It is all going to be about him. And Christine, I woke up this morning and I looked at what Kevin Durant did again last night. And I watched the 40-plus point triple-double that he put on display in a game that Brooklyn needed to have, where Kyrie Irving is out, and it sounds like he's going to be out yet again, where James Harden comes back and plays 46 minutes, but doesn't look like he should have been out there at all because of the production he was not able to provide them. Kevin Durant basically put the team on his back, though, did it. And I woke up this morning and thought, man, if you are someone that enjoys getting jokes off at Paul George's expense, you just got handed the golden goose here, because Kevin Durant set the bar for accomplishment for stars so unreasonably high. It's already affected Giannis and him not wanting to check him down the stretch today, and it felt like it would be easy, low-hanging fruit for people to say, man, look what KD did. Why can't Paul George, if we're going to call him a star in this league, pull the same thing off? And Christine, I think just hearing the way Jalen Rose was on Get Up earlier today, and I feel feel like this tells me a lot about the way we all perceive this and the way we all should. Listen to Jalen Rose answer when he got asked if the Clippers could pull this off without Kawhi.
No. And by the way, if you're the Utah Jazz, and I want to make sure I, you know, give credence to the fact that the Utah Jazz are playing without Mike Conley. But losing the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, to me, is the equivalent of the Bucks losing to the Nets, basically without Harden and Kyrie Irving. It just can't happen. It won't happen. Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Jordan Clarkson, they will get it together. The Utah Jazz had the best regular season record in the entire NBA. The Clippers will not beat the Jazz if Kawhi Leonard doesn't come back.
Chenan Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. and Christine Williamson in today. And that's going to sound dismissive to a lot of people, Christine, but I think it's actually a reality check that we need going into this matchup, because I agree with Jalen Rose in that instance. I don't think they should win this game. I think they could. Like, we've seen Paul George back-to-back 30-plus point outings with Kawhi on the floor. But you pointed out, he's always been good and always been great in some instances when he's allowed to be the second-best guy on the court for you, when he's not asked to do that. And I've seen too many times him not live up to the billing when he is asked to get out in front of lead. So anything good that happens for Paul George tonight, that's gravy to me.
Yeah.
Like, that is icing on the cake, but I am not going to go in expecting this of him, and I feel like it's okay for us to not expect that of him either, because he has shown over the course of time he is a great player in the right instances, but he is not someone in this situation that I expect to thrive.
And I think you saying that you don't expect Paul George to go into this and be a KD coming out of this is ultimately kind of how Paul George has to go into this, because I think it's mental. Like, if he's thinking there's so much pressure on me to perform, to be what KD was, to step in for Kawhi and be able to perform at a level that I haven't been able to in this postseason or even in last postseason. If he's thinking that, I think then the pressure is on him, and that's what causes him to not be able to perform at the level that we expect from him. So if he's not going into this game, if he's going into this game saying, I don't have to do what KD did, I just have to do what I do. He talked about how Ty Lue trusts him and he trusts his teammates. So if he just has the trust in himself, I don't think there's going to be as much pressure. But if he puts that pressure on himself, I think that's kind of when we see playoff P from last season.
And I think that's the thing that comes up for most people. It's like, we see, I said the other day, we need to give him a lot of credit for what happened in game four when the Utah Jazz down the entire game started to make Clippers fans uncomfortable to see if they were going to do the thing again and give up a large lead. He was the one that in a lot of these cases shut the door on them. Big shots, big defensive plays, driving the lane and getting tough buckets. He can go out there and do so much and is capable of so much that, Christine, it does feel like this has to be overwhelmingly mental at this point for a guy who has been locked in. And this is what we talked about with Giannis, where if you build up enough of these moments where, all right, Giannis didn't go out and check KD, everyone's looking at him sideways, Draymond Green's chirping at him on Twitter. Mm-hmm. If you start to build that up in key moments and that's what we think of you, Paul George is what happens. And that's got to be a very taxing thing on an athlete.
He just needs to shut out the outside noise, because if he starts to look at that kind of stuff, if he's paying attention to anything else, then I feel like that's kind of when you get playoff P from last season. But I want to read a stat. I'm a big SIG person. Like, I like to seem like I know what I'm talking about even more because of these stats, as if I'm pulling them out myself. But Paul George will have to carry more of the load, obviously. He averages 5 more shots a game when Kawhi doesn't play this season, but he shoots worse. So that's not promising for him, but I mean, at least he's taking the shots. He knows that he has to step up in those moments, but I feel like he just needs to figure out how to make it he shoots better.
And remember, he's going to go into the game with an opportunity to do that against a team where Mike Conley Jr. is still not playing in this game. And we know Donovan Mitchell has been limping through the middle of this series, not feeling quite himself. Will home court give some of their role players a better opportunity? We will see. But this is probably as fertile a ground for a Paul George performance as there's going to be. And I still want to guard against going in expecting some superhuman performance from a player who is great in the right circumstances. This may just not be that circumstance. But you mentioned the pressure to perform. Coming up next, is that pressure already getting to one NBA franchise who's had issues holding on to stars in the past? We'll get to that next. Chenan Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chenan Golick Jr., the podcast.
So many injuries in the NBA today affecting the outcome of maybe the entire NBA postseason that we completely forgot about one that's coming up in about an hour and 15 minutes here as Joel Embiid and the Sixers are going to get set to play the Atlanta Hawks in that series. Chinna Engel Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We'll get to that in about 10 minutes, but as the association just fed us news through a fire hose today, Christine Williamson with us here in the building. We did have some coaching news. We know Scott Brooks and the Washington Wizards had contract negotiations reportedly fall apart, so he's out there. But this is the interesting one to me, Christine. Zion Williamson's New Orleans Pelicans now parting ways with Stan Van Gundy. We talked to our ESPN Pelicans reporter, Andrew Lopez, earlier in the show, and he said this is as close to a mutual breakup as we're probably going to get in all this. But 1 year into his deal, Christine, you think this organization is starting to feel a little nervous about the prospect of potentially losing out on the best years of another young superstar services after what just happened with AD?
Yeah, what the heck? here's the thing. Zion Williamson has a lot of upside. He hasn't been able to, I feel like, be the player that he can be in New Orleans because he hasn't had a consistent coach. And not only in New Orleans, he had 1 year in college. So, like, he hasn't had anybody to help develop him as a player. So I feel like they need to find somebody that can get in that role that can actually develop this young star because he was crucial. It was crucial for him to come to New Orleans, and I feel like they want him to be there for a long time.
They do, and they just went through what every small market team lives in fear of is what we've seen happen at other spots along the way. The Milwaukee Bucks just avoided this peril coming up this summer, re-signing Giannis to that long-term deal. We've watched Sam Presti turn this situation in Oklahoma City into first-round draft picks for years now. It feels like, and New Orleans just went through this with Anthony Davis, losing out on a big marquee star to the Lakers, getting a haul of picks back in there, and hitting the lottery for the lottery when they found out they were going to get that one overall pick for Zion. And Christine, the fact that they were willing to eat so much of this contract does say a lot about that. So where do you think they end up going next year? We hear all the time someone who's going to connect more with players right now, but as we look out into the marketplace, do we see a lot of that for them here? Do we see candidates that would actually make sense for a team that's got the most precious commodity that the NBA can look for in a superstar player?
I feel like the biggest thing with young players is that you do need somebody that will connect with your players, right? Stan Van Gundy is 61 years old. He wasn't going to be able to connect with his players. I feel like players today have more say in the conversations when it comes to who's going to come in. And I feel like that's ultimately what kind of drove this decision. I know that in May there was a lot of talks about how Stan Van Gundy wasn't getting along with the young players on the team. So I feel like Zion and Brandon Ingram and the young guys in New Orleans are going to have a lot more say in this, or just like a little bit more in whatever their interactions with this potential head coach is going to be very crucial for them to be able to find their next head coach.
Chinna Engel Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Christine Williamson. You mentioned this generation of player, and it is interesting to consider that because we know Stan Van Gundy. Like, he spent a lot of time with the Levitard Show guys around here. We've seen him around this network, and by and large, he was a guy who was a very progressive thinker, like someone who was in line with a lot of the things that you would believe matter to NBA players right now, as we've seen the reaction out into the world to a lot of this. And so that's the interesting part, and especially in a league where, Christine, we just got done watching Tom Thibodeau win coach of the year in the NBA. Like, if you're talking about someone who may in certain circumstances have a coaching style that's not in line with what we think of Gen Z players, younger millennial players, it certainly seems to be Tibbs. So does it say more to you about that locker room then? Because it's kind of fascinating to carry that dynamic in one spot where Tibbs gets coach of the year for the job he did there versus what wasn't able to take hold in New Orleans with the Pelicans and Stan Van Gundy, who I consider a lot less of a hard bleep than a guy like Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, but I feel like I feel like Tibbs' players really vibe with him on another level. And I feel like there has to be a level of respect when it comes to that, too. And so who knows? Like you asked, like, is it saying more about the locker room than it is about Stan Van Gundy? Possibly, because maybe they just didn't vibe with him like they are with Tibbs. I don't think that, I mean, Gen Z, they grew up in a generation. Zion Williamson has been a star since he was in high school, right? And so I feel like you have to be able to connect with players. I don't think that it needs to be their best friend. I feel like Tibbs probably connects with them on another level, kind of in a father figure type way. And maybe that just wasn't happening in New Orleans in the same way that it's happening.
And to be fair, we always have asked the question of, hey, is Tibbs going to be around when they actually land a star? Because we saw through this postseason, Julius Randle's great. Derrick Rose was resurgent this year. It was all admirable. Seeing him and Taj Gibson back out on the court was awesome. But is that a group that clearly is without a marquee star? Like Julius Randle, most improved, but that seems to be the ceiling right now for his career. Mm-hmm. Would they actually have Tibbs around when they hopefully go out and accomplish the rest of the plan and bring in a marquee star? Looking overall in the NBA, though, Christine, at the jobs available, now we've got New Orleans there. We mentioned Washington's involved here. We had Orlando, Indiana, Portland, and Boston thrown in there as well. Which of those intrigues you most based on the potential there for whoever gets the keys?
I think the one job that is probably at the top of the list is the Celtics job, just because Brad Stevens just is still there, right? So, like, he basically is still working there. He just doesn't want to coach anymore, right? You still have all the stars that were playing on that team. It's not like they're, like, trying to rebuild or kind of up in the air. We all know what the Celtics are doing. So I feel like that's the number one job. I feel like New Orleans is probably right behind that because you have a lot of young stars. You have Zion Williamson and stuff like that. But I think the Celtics is probably the number one overall job right now.
I'd agree. The sell always there with Danny Ainge was, man, you got all these assets that was just a bunch of assets they turned into almost picks
right.
in these situations, or almost players in these situations. And Jason Tatum and Jalen Brown are ascending. I think it's so interesting, Christine, the way we're talking about no Portland mentioned in this conversation right now. You got Dame Lillard out there. We saw Yusuf Nurkic at times perform really well for them on that team. We know CJ McCollum's a good piece in that backcourt as well. But it feels like as I look at that situation, we all, like, I know Portland gets mad at the national media for doing the thing where we're trying to pry Dame out of there, free Damian Lillard, treat him like a player that we always try and take from these smaller markets for a guy who sounds overwhelmingly loyal. But there's got to be some feeling, right, that we've seen what they're capable of. Like, short of being able to lure a marquee star, another star, out to Portland, I can't imagine a coach. We saw Jason Kidd very publicly turn down his role in being courted here, probably looking and saying, man, what more can I do with the greatness? Like, Dame's right. been great. That's never been an issue, but how are we supposed to get that to the next level? That's a difficult ask for anyone.
I like that Jason Kidd said that he didn't feel comfortable because he was called out, but really he probably is like, I don't feel comfortable because I do not want to go there. I feel like it's hard because you have Damian Lillard. It's a win now situation, right? Like, if you go to the Trailblazers, this is either it's a boom or bust situation for whatever coach goes there. Either they do a really good job or they do the same things that Terry Stotts were doing and it's just going to be a bust, right? So it's a tough situation because there's so much pressure. You have to win now. You have to make it out of the first round of the playoffs and you have to do it right now because, like you said, they already have a star like Dame Lillard. They have a top 10 player in the NBA. So you guys should be able to get this done. So I would honestly say that's probably like the last job on the list of like intriguing jobs because there's so much pressure to win right now.
I do love the idea of Jason Kidd in this instance being like, everyone's probably been in the situation at one point or another where you're going along with some significant other here and the time finally comes and they drop the, hey, I just want to let you know, I think I love you. And there's that long pause and it's like, no, you don't. Stop that, silly. Like, Jason Kidd clearly not comfortable accepting their love, and it makes it awkward for everybody
right.
trying to walk around in the aftermath
right.
of that.
Right.
So we'll see if Portland can wash the stink of that feeling off them and go on and find someone who is going to value them for the great gifts that they bring to the table. But coming up next, what are the 76ers going to be able to expect to bring to the table tonight against the Hawks? Is Atlanta actually in position to win this series? Next, here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests have joined us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Christine Williamson. You can catch her tonight. It's a late one for you, Christine. Sports Nation coming up later today here. It's a shame you guys won't have anything to talk about.
You have absolutely nothing to talk about. You're right. There has been absolutely nothing going on in this world, sports of world. Worlds of sports? Sports of...
The wide world of sports?
And the world of sports.
World of sports craft
or sports
here?
Of world. That sports. Doesn't make any sense. But there's been a lot going on today
there's
is what I'm trying to say.
There's been a lot going on in the sports of world here. And as we continue to focus on just one of the many sports of the world coming up later today, we've talked so much, Christine, about Kawhi Leonard, his injury that's going to keep him out of Game 5. for the Clippers. We've talked so much about what happened last night with Kevin Durant going absolutely the hell off in a game where his counterparts were also a bit banged up. But we got another game coming up between the Hawks and the 76ers tonight. This series now tied 2-2, Christine, and Joel Embiid 0-12 in the second half of Game 4. They let a valuable, I think, commodity get away in the rest time. Should they have been able to gentleman sweep this series, similar to what we thought Chris Paul was going to get with the Phoenix Suns? So heading into tonight, Christine, is there any part of you that thinks the Hawks can actually pull this off and not only take an extra game, but actually win the series?
I would love for the Hawks to pull this off. I'm not a fan of anything, of any team or anything. Like, I have no dog in any fight. But I am a lover of Trae Young. And if I feel like anybody can get this done, it's Trigger Trae, because he gets buckets. So I would love to see the Hawks pull this off. However, well, here's the thing. Ben Simmons was completely non-existent in the second half, just like Joel Embiid was. So if Ben Simmons actually plays ball like he can, I feel like the 76ers will be able to take this one away. But yeah, I feel like I trust Trae Young a little bit too.
You're right to trust Trae Young. I think Trae Young has earned our trust at this point. But the name you just brought up in Ben Simmons is a place where I'm having some trust issues right now.
Right.
Because, Christine, I said before this series started, I thought it was Sixers in seven. I thought the Hawks and Trae Young had shown they were pesky enough, that they were scrappy enough, that he was enough of a star to kind of facilitate things we saw at the end of Game 4. Ben Simmons as a no-show in the second half of that game was inexplicable to me. Like, there's a team with a clear hierarchy in the 76ers. Joel Embiid is the sun and the moon there. He's the superstar on that team. He was the MVP candidate. Tobias Harris is the best offensive player. And Ben Simmons is supposed to be aggressive going towards the basket, a great physical, phenomenal distributor, and a great defender. And for him to be a no-show in the spot where you look, and you know in the huddle, all right, this guy's hurt. Joel Embiid doesn't have the push. He already had to go back in the locker room. That we have got to be able to give him more. Like, you got to know the spots to step up there. And the fact that he went ghost in the second half of that game has me concerned, because this is Doc Rivers, the head coach of the 76ers, Tuesday, talking about Joel Embiid, especially now that the time they're going to have in between games whittled down to just one day. Take a listen.
No, I have no more. I really don't. Listen. We walk on the floor, we're good, you know, and we wouldn't put Joel out there if he couldn't play. You know, obviously, he's not going to be exactly what he was all the time with the injury, but I'll take what we have. So I have no concern.
Now, Chenan Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golick Jr. and Christine Williamson. I believe Doc when he says that sentiment-wise, they're not going to put anyone out there on the floor if they're not ready to play. That being said, we just watched James Harden back out on the floor last night for the Brooklyn Nets. He didn't look like he was in a position to be out in that game. We saw Anthony Davis do this with the Lakers, and we knew coming into this series that he was banged up. Joel Embiid with a tear in that meniscus. And so, Christine, I have no doubt that he is healthy enough to get out there, but I'm not really sure we can say that he is healthy enough or will be from here on out to lift them to where they would be after this series. Like, I think they can make it through, but I think the championship ceiling got lowered way, way down once we saw the war of attrition really starting to get wins on him.
Yeah, he's definitely not 100%. The thing about a torn meniscus, though, I've known plenty of people that have torn their meniscus and still played sports perfectly fine. So I think torn meniscus sounds a lot worse. It's obviously a bad injury, but it sounds a lot worse than I think that it actually is when it comes to output and being able to play on that injury. I'm not sure if there's actually any pain associated with it. I think it's a little bit more just like uncomfortable. So I feel like it's just Joel getting used to having a torn meniscus and being able to play through it. And obviously it was affecting him in the second half of that match, of that game. But I feel like the biggest thing for the 76ers is just having somebody else step up in a way that they hadn't before. And Toby obviously has been balling for them. He's their number two player, doing great on offense. Ben Simmons holding it down on defense, but I think he acknowledged it himself offensively that he should have been more aggressive. If you watch him throughout the game, he's just chilling. Like, he's literally not doing anything, just kind of standing under the basket, like waiting for somebody to do something for. I don't know what he was waiting for. He looked like he was just kind of like, oh, like, let me watch this basketball game on the court. So he just needs to be more aggressive.
Yeah, he needs to be more aggressive. Joel Embiid, you're right to point out, even if it's not a pain thing, the only reason that I worry about it is I thought he was, in games one and two especially, making a lot of the adjustments that you would need to, not having as much push. You saw him settling for more jumpers outside of going down and banging in the lane. You saw him adjusting that and having success with that. 39 and 40 points back-to-back in games one and two. And even in games three and four, when you looked at the output, the most recent game. He was a monster on the glass. He was a real help out defensively. But the fact that we talked about John Collins on the other side stepping up and guarding Tobias Harris and not even having to acknowledge Ben Simmons, like, that's a tough look for this team. So, you know what, Christine? It might even be better to say this can be a great litmus test game, because we need to see what Ben Simmons is capable of in the limited instances where he's asked. Like, again, we talk about with Paul George, we know he's going to be the defined number two on this team in star power next to Joel Embiid, but can you give enough there? We don't need KD output last night where we look at you as the best in the game, but we need something akin to that if we're going to believe the Sixers still have a shot at winning the title this year.
I think ultimately, I feel like the number one pressure cooker situation in basketball is when you're on the free throw line, right? And we know how Giannis is on the free throw line. He has taken a lot of time. It's just it's not his best position or his best spot. However, it's kind of similar when it comes to Ben Simmons. He's 8 of 25 from the free throw line in the postseason when he usually shoots like 61% during the regular season. So I feel like there's some type of correlation between players' output on the free throw line and them just like being aggressive when it calls for them to be aggressive in the game. I don't know if he just like doesn't want to get fouled because he doesn't want to get fouled so he doesn't have to go to the free throw line, so he's not trying to be aggressive. I don't know what it is, but I feel like there has to be some type of correlation between those two things.
Well, it's got to be tough to be aggressive in the ways you want to when everyone else knows what that way is, right? Like, for Ben Simmons, as overwhelming physically as he is, we know he's not really one that's going to go out there and shoot a bunch of jumpers, and everyone else in the free world knows that too. And so that's got to make it a pretty daunting task, whether it is stepping to the free throw line or just trying to do it from the field. And Ben Simmons has showed he doesn't have an interest in doing. Doc Rivers and that team have been very careful in the ways that they have talked about that to make sure they keep his confidence up. But at some point, it is just you, and tonight seems like it's going to be one of those nights. Again, that's a 7:30 Eastern tip to see if the Hawks can continue to go out here and try and make life real interesting, and not for nothing, build a pretty solid foundation for whatever they want to go and recruit and bring down there to play with Trae Young in Atlanta later on. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN is the phone number. But coming up next, I have always come out here and campaigned for one idea. You got to have the common sense person in your organization, some paid millennial, Gen Z kid, to sit there and ignore your ideas for the entire meeting and come back and tell you, hey, they're going to tear you apart for this. We have another organization that probably needs to heed my advice. We will tell you who that was next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Christine Williamson, kind enough to fill in for Janae Agumake today here on ESPN Radio. You guys can check her out on SportsCenter, on Snapchat, on Hoop Streams, on abundance of ESPN digital programs, and tonight streaming on ESPN Plus. Christine, we appreciate the time as always. Been a lot of fun, friend, even though I found out that you and some of our other mutual friends were talking bad about my bald head behind my back.
We weren't talking bad. We were trying to just level you up.
All right, so you know what? There's some things that we need to address then behind the scenes here, because I am also one who's not going to lie. I could use some leveling up. So
that was what the conversation was. We were like, how can we level Mike up?
This admission, you know what, God, this really seems like it's turning into therapy couch in a way that I was not fully prepared for today.
You're welcome.
Oh, wow, man. And now anyone watching on ESPN Plus TV really doing me dirty here with Bald Don't Lie. So I stare here at Christine Williamson, who makes the bald head look a lot better than I do. And so clearly I've got some soul searching to do. Thankfully, We had some guests come through today that also helped us search through the rest of what's going on in the worlds of sports, as Christine Williamson so eloquently put it earlier today. Ramona Shelburne, our ESPN NBA writer, stopped by to update us on some of the injury news around the league. Andrew Lopez, our Pelicans reporter, caught us up to date on Stan Van Gundy's firing by the New Orleans Pelicans after just one season with the team. Dan Orlovsky on why spring interceptions don't matter was a glorious conversation with him that ended up with this idea of Justin Fields somehow getting puked or potentially pooped on here like a baby. I'm not exactly sure how we got to that moment, but it feels important to be straight up with people on this, Christine. So I do have a question that I've got to ask you on the fashion front, Christine, if we're going to talk about me leveling up, because I've got a dilemma going into tonight. I've got a game to attend. I have got a co-host to support, and we got to get to it and keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golic Jr.
All right, so Christine, here is my dilemma. Because I'm getting ready here. I'm out in Los Angeles, as I have mentioned a few times on this show. And coming up tonight, there is a basketball game. The Los Angeles Sparks are getting ready to play the Phoenix Mercury here. It's a 7:30 Pacific tip, 10:30 Eastern.
Okay.
And I came out here like first day of school. Like, I was ready to get fresh down here at the game. I wanted to show up and show well for Chanae as someone who is, you know, in her circle here. And so I had a great LA Sparks cream crew neck here. I was going to walk in, feel really good about myself, despite the fact that I got to level up my bald head. Here's the problem. It is like 90 degrees outside and what feels like damn near 100% humidity, and I am afraid that I am going to nuke this thing before I get over to the arena for this. So, Christine, do I need to go full-on outfit change here, or am I going to be able to survive this heat wave?
Well, first of all, we both live in Connecticut, and you were going to L.A. You could have very easily been like, yo, Christine, I'm going out to L.A. I'm going to be in these L.A. streets. Help me put some fits together before I go out there, but you didn't do that. So I'm a little disappointed about that. And now you're asking me to help you with the outfit, and I can't help you shop or like get your clothes together. However, I will say that you probably need an outfit change. But also, a style tip, it doesn't matter what the weather is. You just look good.
That is a fair point. And Christine, I feel like that works a lot better for you. My body still feels like it's 300 pounds sometimes, and it still definitely sweats like that. And so it might look a little bit different, more like a camo print by the time I get into the arena. So,
that's fine.
All right, TBD on this. Camo is still a pattern that works, so we might be able to work this one out. Keeping that same energy, Christine, heading into the U.S. Open coming up this weekend, casinos and bettors are facing long shot odds for Phil Mickelson heading into this one, and it has led to seven-figure liability for sportsbooks heading into the weekend. More bets have been placed on Phil Mickelson to win this week at Torrey Pines than have been placed on any other golfer at multiple U.S. sportsbooks. At Caesars Sportsbook by William Hill, Mickelson has attracted nearly twice as many bets as any other golfer, and by the time Thursday's first round tees off, bookmakers say it's expecting to have that seven-figure liability on the 50-to-1 long shot. So, Christine, apparently people are riding the wave after Lefty's big win earlier this year.
Yeah, clearly, but like, does it work like that? I feel like it, I don't know that much about betting, right? But I feel like I would put my money elsewhere, just because if it's Phil Mickelson or the field, I would take the field, because isn't that how it works? Like, I'm not a better. I don't know.
Christine, it's how it should work when we're talking about the oldest golfer to ever win a major this year, heading into a tournament that he has always struggled in. So we're going to let other people handle that. We're going to try and help some other people out, because you helped me. We have tried to help bettors. Now it is trying helping people that have to involve these Twitters. Because earlier today, the San Jose Sharks became the latest in a long line of teams to put out unfortunate graphics on Twitter. They tried to put something up here to celebrate, and I put that in quotes, Juneteenth, a holiday that most people only became aware of last summer in their consciousness. And for anyone not watching on ESPN Plus, it involves a shark biting through the chains around two hands. Christine, this feels like one of those instances where you got to check with more people inside the building before you put this out.
You got to talk to more people. You got to put some more context. You got to do something, because it was a black artist that created it, but they need to put some more information out there before they just put a picture of a shark biting through chains, because the shark, why are you even in this? This is not about you. It's not about you.
Like, it just, it feels like, again, we know these decisions are made way above the social media handlers, pay grade, and other people are involved, but this is probably not the place you need to put a shark in.
It's a really bad
look.
And
it's definitely not a place you need to hit with the hashtag wallpaper Wednesday.
Heck,
there's a lot to fix.
Like, what? This is not a... No, no. Please, San Jose Sharks. I will say, though, I did see that the guy that made it said that it symbolizes the importance of professional organizations playing and taking a stand. But still, no. They don't need to be in it at all. It's not
Everyone doesn't always have to be involved in everything. No. Stick around here on ESPN Radio. They'll get you back to sports momentarily coming up next.
Thanks for listening to Jhené and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.